Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, everyone, to Then and Now. I'm Brad Sham, and we are delighted to be able to bring you grown-up, unedited, for the most part, visits with real-life, flesh-and-blood people, mostly in the history of the Dallas Cowboys, then and now. And our guest on this episode of Then and Now is, I will tell you in all candor, one of my very favorite players in now 44 years broadcasting these games, for a variety of reasons, and therefore it saddens me a little that I probably have to tell you who Larry Cole is. But first, let me welcome our guest who has a new book, Living the Dream on America's Team, number 63, Larry Cole. How good of you to come in. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Brad. It's so good to see you after all these years.
It's been a long time, and I was thinking as I was reading your book and as I was thinking about how great a story you have, in my opinion, in your years before you came to the NFL, but certainly in your years with the Cowboys. And it's been 40 years since you played.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes me want to lie down. Does it feel like that long to you?
You know, when I started, when I retired from the, construction, business a year ago, I just said, okay, I'm going to take a time to reflect. And I, then I said, I did a bunch of things, didn't I? Holy crap. And it's like, thinking back to my feelings as a little boy in the farm, and then a scared cadet at the academy, and then, a rookie with the Cowboys, all those things. And it just kind of felt, I went from step to step to step. And to tell you the truth, because I did this, and it's almost a good psychological reason to do the book, is that it was fun to refresh my memories, and it's even more fun to run across the people that I met in my book signings that are old neighbors and friends and compadres and, critics. I mean, fun critics, banter critics. And I've really enjoyed it. It's kind of it's kind of like the, musicians do a farewell tour. I'm kind of doing a farewell tour. But
well, musicians don't do farewell tours anymore. They just age and continue to play.
That's true. I mean, Willie Nelson, it's like, well, that's one thing I can't do is continue to play football.
No, but you are. Here's the thing. This is a great book for Cowboy fans.
Yeah.
But to me, and we're going to get into it, this is a really good lesson on how the world has changed and for young people, what they have that they don't know that they have. But we'll get into that in a minute. So, again, I feel the need to really introduce the world again to Larry Cole, who was a 16th-round draft choice in a 17-round draft in 1968. If you look in the media guide, it says Larry went to Hawaii, which is true, but as he just alluded to, he played 3 years at the Air Force Academy and then checked into the University of Houston for a minute. And that turned out to have a little bit of an impact on your professional career, and we'll touch on that. The first thing, and by the way, you said you start this book in the prologue, let me introduce myself. I'm Larry Cole. But this is, as you read these paragraphs, it sounds like this is maybe a conversation you had more than once with someone recently, because people who are younger,
yeah,
they didn't know you played. And
I know what you did. If you're younger and 45, you've never heard of me, and it's like, no, I don't know. And then, but I mean, it's a true story. One of my subcontractors, he's an electrician in Dallas, and I was finishing up the job here, and he had his young guys, and he told them, yeah, he played for the NFL, and they looked, yeah, right. And then they looked at me and said, did you really? Yeah, I did. And then he said, Google it. And these days, you know, everything's on the internet. And really the whole, you know, concept of writing a book is so much different now because, you know, digital access, social media, all the things rather than just peddling books. And anyway, it's been a, you know, it's been a interesting thing to do. And I'm, you know, I have enough time to do it. And that gives me enjoyment because I can, you know, enjoy the social relationship where running a construction business is all detail, 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 and you're constantly thinking, calculating, planning, you know, the whole thing. And so it's been a nice retirement therapy.
And we'll get into the construction business because you started it while you were playing, and then
right.
By the time you retired after the 80 season, right? That was your
right.
last year?
Yes.
So you became one of the most successful home builders in the area, particularly in the mid-cities.
Right.
And that was something that the farm boy in Minnesota that you describe in the
right.
early pages would never have had
no way.
Any idea about. But let me just still address the people who didn't get to see you play and didn't get to read about you. So 68 to 80, 16th round draft choice, and partly because of an injury to the guy in front of you, Willie Towns, but only partly, you started most of your rookie year, right?
Yeah, I started the fifth game after he got hurt.
That didn't happen. Tom Landry or other NFL coaches were not starting rookies in the late 60s.
Right.
So that had to speak to what you brought. And I have always told people, because I think it's true, that you were not the most athletic guy that anybody ever saw play, but you were one of the smartest. And for Landry to have that kind of faith in you, you had to have a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also write in here that you never had a surgery in all that time. How is that even possible? Because you started most
yeah.
of the time, a lot of years at defensive end, and
yeah.
then inside at defensive tackle.
Yeah.
How'd you avoid having any surgeries?
Well, I would say my mentor, Bob Lilly, was, you know, awfully good on teaching how to protect yourself and, you know, get in situations now. I mean, he tore up his, you know, his knee and real bad at the end there. And I never got that. My worst injury was the hyperextended knee. And these days they do kind of scope surgery or get in there and clean it out and all that. Well, you know, it's like once you have knee surgery and you go to the veterinarian, you know, up in Bonham, Dr. Knight.
Dr. Marvin Knight. He was a legend in his own right.
That's right. And once you have that, just like, you know, I know, well, you weren't here for the, you know, the 60s, but, you know, Leakey, Don, I forget, there's about 6-7 of those offensive linemen. They were all just beaten up after 7-8 years, and it's like, I'm not going to do that. And so all we did was, you know, hot and cold, iced it, got it down, and 7 weeks later, you know, I'm back on the field. And then, you know, last year in the NBA Finals, you know, Giannis comes back after 2 weeks with that same injury. I mean, you know, the foot went forward, and it's absolutely amazing how they can do that now.
And by the way, you have a scene in the book where you there are several. In fact, this was in 1970 because you missed
Right.
The Monday night loss to the Cardinals, after which one of the most legendary stories in that era of the Cowboys was that the coaches got so disgusted with the players who had fallen to 5-4 that they basically left practice and said, you guys play touch football or whatever the hell you want to do.
Yeah.
And the story is that Leroy Jordan kind of took it over. Mm-hmm. And after that, the team kind of took off. But you weren't even at practice. You were hurt then.
Yeah. No, I know. I was. I had broken my arm. You know, I mean, I think it told the story. You know, Ernie Stotner, and, you know, tough old Pittsburgh Steeler, you know, Hall of Famer.
And the Cowboys' defensive coordinator and defensive line
coach. Exactly. And, you know, he was my line coach and everything. And so, you know, I mean, he just was able to kind of put me in position where, I could, try to keep up. You know, like I said, I was a little brother of the family, and, you know, I was like the little brother. All these other guys in their prime, and I mean, nobody executed the flex defense better than Doomsday 1. And you get to Doomsday 2, and they were so athletic, they didn't have to do it
They
perfectly.
Didn't have to worry about it.
No.
Well, one of the things that really tickled me was you tell the story of coming back from that injury in 1970, and the doctor finally, you can finally get out of the house, you can finally do some exercises, some rehab, and then the doctor says to you, about another week, you ought to be able to go.
Right.
And right after that, Tom Landry comes in, and I can hear his voice saying, you're suiting up this week, okay?
Okay. It's like, okay. Yeah, that was a hyperextension. That was 7 weeks. But I broke my arm because Ernie, we had lost the week before that game to St. Louis, and he was all pissed off. And, and Ron East, Ron East, but he wasn't here when you were here.
Right.
But, I mean, he's a tough Marine, and he wasn't going to take any crap from me. You know, I hit him harder and harder and went in, put a donut on it, send back out, and then I really broke it across the way. But I played the Super Bowl, in a cast with that hand, and I came back after 4 weeks. But I was around the team, but I wasn't there in the practice field. But it really was taken off the pressure because Tom was pressing so hard. I mean, he wanted so bad for us, to win it. And all of a sudden, the players took control of the situation of leadership on and off the field. Dave Edwards, I mentioned him, when we were talking earlier.
Great Cowboys linebacker.
Keep them out of the zone. And, we did play in, Cleveland in the mud. It's like, here we go again. We're going to lose and be out of the
because you'd lost to Cleveland in the championship game in the last 2 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, we, get to, the first playoff game against Detroit, and then, we damn near lost that game, but, it was a tough, and I guess we won, 5 to nothing. And, it was that determination that we took through that year. And as I said in the book, once we got to the Super Bowl and it was the Blooper Bowl and everything went against it and everything, but we were, we got to the party and we were so damn proud of what we had done, and it meant the world to us. And when we got home, that fans met us, after we even lost, and, it's like, okay, we got this. And I told you the second time we lost to Cleveland, I had eggs thrown in my front door. I'd bought a house in North Dallas. It's like, God. And I left the next day to finish college in Minnesota. So it's like, I didn't have to deal with this.
I want to make sure that everyone listening who never saw you play, and, I don't think ego has ever been anything that you had to overcome, and so you understand that there's a lot of people who never heard of you.
Yeah.
But I'd like you to read on the very last page of your book, we each have a copy here, that second paragraph from the top, because I want you to tell people what Tom Landry said about you at your retirement press conference where you said it was now time for Tom Landry to speak.
Okay. Second paragraph. Okay.
Yeah.
It was now time for Tom Landry to speak. He said, I respect the person Larry is as I did Roger, who, retired the year before. When a player of this caliber makes that decision, I know it wasn't done for any other reason than what is best for him and his family. When you do that, I don't try to talk him out of it, even though I'd like to. We'll miss Larry Cole as a person more than anything else. I know that if I had 45 guys like Larry Cole, I'd never retire because they'd be a pleasure to coach, and I know they'd contribute greatly to the team.
Did you know he felt that way about you?
No. I did. You know, the
and let me just interrupt you. Yeah. One other thing you said a few pages before that, that Charlie Waters, talking to Ernie Stotner, asked Ernie who was the most competitive guy on the defense, and Ernie said Larry Cole, not Bob Lilly, not Leroy Jordan, not Chuck Howley, not Mel Renfro. These were great players, all pros, Hall of Famers. And Ernie Stotner said the most competitive guy on our defense is Larry Cole.
Yeah.
And did you know he felt that way?
Actually, I think he did. I mean, I think I did know that. You know, I mean, they don't normally talk about it, but, you know, Tom Landry, I mean, I was in sync with him coming to the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, I was a Green Bay Packer fan, you know, but Tom Landry had been in the military. I had been in the military. You know, he took industrial engineer. I took civil engineering, you know, I think like that way. And he was such a fair and you know, straightforward guy that I felt like I would get every opportunity. But, you know, along the way, you know, meanwhile, you know, you're always in search. And the game was moving, you know, to faster ends and quicker ends and everything. And, you know, every year, you know, Tody Smith was 1 year. He's going to replace me. And then, you know, after that, it was.
Then you moved inside. It was Bill Gregory.
Right. It was, you know, well, first Harvey came in and backed up. But, you know, he wasn't tough enough. And then Ernie, I give him credit to, you know, make him tougher. And Too Tall Jones was backing up Pat Toomey in the right. And then, you know, the next year. You know, they switch it around, and Too Tall's on the left, Harvey's on the right. And so I'm playing alternating with Bill at, you know, right tackle. And then, you know, the week before the first game of the season, you know, and it's Tom Lee. Oh, by the way, we're going to start Randy White, you know, at the tackle.
Who had been playing linebacker.
Yeah, for been 2 years. Linebacker. And it's like, well, we got to get him the field. We're going to play him. And it's like, okay. And it's like, God, are you kidding me? But yeah, I don't hold it against Tom Landry because I know, and I agreed with it, get him on the field. It's like.
But just not necessarily.
Well, I mean, I was so expendable that, you know, I got replaced by a guy, you know, that made all pro and was co-MVP of the Super Bowl. So they had a hard time replacing me at right tackle.
There you go.
But I played the piano and I played three different, you know, positions and started at three different positions in the Super Bowl.
All right. Now if you, as the rappers say, if you don't know, now you know. Now, if you didn't have any idea who Larry Cole was or is, or why you should read his book, Living the Dream on America's Team, you've got a little sense of it now. So now we're going to go back because it's then and now. So I tell people all the time that you are the author of my very favorite play in all of the years I've been fortunate enough to broadcast Cowboy games. So I will set the scene and let you describe the play. Mm-hmm. It is December 1979 at Texas Stadium. It's the last game of the regular season against the hated Washington team. The winner is going to win the division. The loser is probably going to miss the playoffs, which is what happened to Washington. And the Cowboys have a lot of injuries on offense, and it's back and forth. Washington's up by two or three scores, and the Cowboys come back and catch up slowly and pull even. John Riggins, Hall of Fame running back, takes a pitch out, goes around right end, 66 yards for a touchdown. The Cowboys clawing back in. Now Washington's got a 6-point lead. In your book, you described it as near midfield. I couldn't remember if it was closer to the 20, but it was around the 2-minute warning.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are out of timeouts. They've got third and middle to short. All they've got to do is make a first down. The game's over.
Mm-hmm.
And they wind up running the same pitch play to Riggins, who I won't insult you if I suggest he was faster than you.
I don't think so.
they run the same play that he took 66 yards for a touchdown. Yeah. Now, so this is a third down play.
Mm-hmm.
Pick it up for me, please. This is my favorite play in 43 years.
Well, this is the year that Tuttle was out boxing. You know, it's like, gee, thanks, Tuttle. I appreciate that, you know. And, you know, first, you know, we get to the start of the season, and they were trying to get Larry Buffet in there, but he just wasn't, you know, measuring up. So the last week I moved to left end. It's like, oh, my God, you got to do off-season training. It's a different position, different steps and everything. And then they brought in John Dutton, which was great, and, you know, just kind of stabilized it. But, we were soft. We were tough and competitive, and we did the best we can. So, you know, we would give up, you know, bend but don't break kind of, you know, defense, and did pretty good most of the time. But anyway, this was, you know, in that particular play, I'd seen it earlier, and, you know, that play has a counter. You know, you go out, and then you get everybody going, and then you, you know, hand it up the middle. So, you know, it was, you know, to me, my choice whether or not I think they would go up the middle or they'd go out. But, you know, I read the tackle and especially the center, he just seemed to be leaning out to the outside. And so instead of taking a step up and reacting, I took a step sideways and went from here to there. And so, you know, I mean, football's all about the angles. And because of that, I got out there and, made the tackle. And, you know, the whole crowd erupted. It just, like, felt like they made the tackle with me. And, you know, athletes like Stephen Curry and, you know, all these great stars, you know, they get the roar. They get it. But that's the only time, I think, that I ever have that feeling. And it was so satisfying, you know, to do that, and especially with a weaker team. And, you know, I mentioned the book and, you know, walked off the field, looked at Tom Landry, looked at each other, and it's like, yeah, we won this. You know, we're better.
And that play was really all about your football intellect, your engineering background,
right.
Like you said, all angles. But you were not faster than Riggins, but
no.
You ran. I don't think you were touched from the snap of the ball because they were trying to fake the counter.
Yeah.
But you ran in between all the blockers.
Yeah, I just scraped off of the in back of the guard. Yeah.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Right to it. And, of course, and then Tom Landry said, well, if I knew you that fast, I would have been harder than you in practice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You were sandbagging. In my memory, Riggins didn't get the ball on the wide pitch from Joe Theismann more than a second or two before you were on top of him.
Well, it was... I mean, no, it was out to the flat is when I got there. And I probably traveled probably about 7 yards. And, I remember, you know, hearing the rebroadcast. And, I mean, you and Charlie was, you know, hurt that year and subbing in. And, you know, Charlie's saying, you've got to love it. Got to believe. And, see, I feel like, the years that I played, you know, I'm a bit of a team historian, you know, on Doomsday 1 and 2, and that's how we were America's team in the 70s, you know. I think it's too loosely, you know, used these days, you know, from two different eras. And in my mind, the older teams don't get, you know, enough credit of the whole Landry era, and it's like the Landry era, you know, it's the Jimmy Johnson era, really, you know, and a little bit of Switzer, but, you know, and then kind of the rest. And, you know, it's, I mean, the rules change, game change, I get all that, but, you know, I see the videotape, the history of the Cowboys, and, you know, 75% of it, you know, is after, you know, Tom Landry, and it's like, yeah, that's past in memory, but you don't know how many people, you know, remember buying $1 seats at the old Cotton Bowl and, you know, how many, you know, still put Tom Landry up in, you know, in just a whole different, you know, category. And, of course, these are the fans from 45 to, you know, 70, 80 years old.
So there's a couple of things. One is that there's frequent debates among Cowboy fans about which team was better, 92, 93, or the 77 team.
Yeah.
And you write in your book, oh, come on, Bubba, you can turn the phone off for crying out loud.
You write
in your book, and again, it's Larry Cole, whose book is Living the Dream on America's Team. You write that you thought the 70-71 team, which went to back-to-back Super Bowls, finally won the one in 71. Mm-hmm. You thought that was a better team. You didn't say more talented, but you said a better team than the one that beat Denver in New Orleans in 77. Why'd you think that?
Because of the discipline that we were earlier talking about, you know, after, you know, losing to St. Louis, and we were all, you know, holding each other accountable, getting ready to play, getting the right mindset. It was kind of like, okay, it's December, you know, you got family and everything. No, our number one priority is football for a month. You know, you can get back to your families after that. And we just made it, you know, our business to do it. And then, you know, had that disappointing loss, and then Landry had to play, you know, multiple quarterbacks and get that out of his system. And then Roger won 10 in a row. But once we got on that roll and started winning the close ones, you know, we went into the Dolphin game just confident. We were scared. It's like, you know, this could happen again. And we were just relieved when we won it. You know, it was still exciting. But the 77 team was so damn talented. You know, I mean, you know, I was – and actually, it was – you know, for me, it's like that's one of the only years that I really didn't play much. And but I, you know, substituted quite a bit, and so I was fresh, and it really kind of recharged me. And it's like I was going to retire after that. Okay, they got everything, you know, covered. And then I said, you know, I feel pretty damn good. I still want to keep going, and I'm glad I did.
You talked about the focus of the team, 70-71, and being really. The one thing I wanted to ask you about as I was reading this book and thinking about how. You could not have had, by today's standards, I don't know if you felt this way living it, but by today's standards, you couldn't have had a more rigorous upbringing, Spartan upbringing, than you did in Minnesota on your family's farm. And you worked it from the time you were a little boy.
Yeah.
And you write a lot about that. Boy, I think every kid should read about what you and your siblings and your parents and aunts and uncles, what you all did. Because that was how you lived. That was what you were doing. You didn't really think about it. And then it sounded like you came to football late.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a driving passion in the eighth grade. You didn't imagine playing in the NFL.
No.
And the one thing that you hear a lot today is about the value of finding a player who really loves football,
mm-hmm.
and how teams really try to weed out the ones who, in the vernacular, just don't love football. Mm-hmm. But the life that you describe living, really, almost until you went into the Air Force Academy, did not sound like anybody who loved football. Not that you didn't like it, it just wasn't a priority. So how did you come to the game?
Well, I just, you know, my brother you know, played football, and he was a four-year letterman. And, you know, I mean, this is a small town, you know, Minnesota, about 3,000 people. And plus the farms, you know, around the way for, you know, the students. But he had a full scholarship at the University of Nebraska. And so when when I was in seventh grade, he went off to play for them. And he played freshman ball, and he got hurt, and then he got hurt again as a sophomore. And he ended up just giving it up and got a survey job in the off season and ended up, you know, being a civil engineer for about 50, 60 years. And that was, you know, his deal. And, you know, and I, you know, I kind of had the same, you know, interest in civil engineering and that type of thing. And my mother was such a stickler in education. And, you know, it was, you know, the whole point was a means to an end. But with my dad, you know, be a man that can do a day's work. It's like you're measured by doing your work and being proud of it. And I took that all the way through my career.
That's like hard work.
Yes,
I
hard
mean,
work.
And as I loved, a kid, and you loved it.
I loved it because I...
And not 9 to 5.
No. It was long days. And especially working for other farmers, you know, that, you know, they're paying you, not much, but they're paying you to do work. And so, you know, you do it. And then I just took pride of, you know, doing and finishing any job of whatever you're doing. And as I get older, it kind of relieves the stress and tension by doing that. And I still, I mean, I'm making a little cat house right now because I've got to do something, you know, creatively to, you know, just kind of entertain myself.
When do you think you, if you ever really did, fell in love with football?
Well, okay, yeah, getting to that point. Okay, so basketball was my first love. I mean, even from the third, fourth,
fifth grade. There's a picture of you dunking a basketball in here.
Yeah, I know.
And I trust you, that's not doctored.
No, it's not. in fact, one of my good Air Force friends was a college basketball player there in Hawaii, and he said, I didn't know he played basketball. I said, yeah. I was a hell of a rebounder, you know. Anyway, I was, you know, kind of the third best player on the team as a junior, and that was the year we damn near won the state and had a hell of a team. But there's a writer called Lefty Ranweiler in the Wilmer, you know, area, and which is like 30 miles from Grand Falls, and he covered all the teams around there. And, you know, and we were starting to win, and I was starting to get noticed, you know, and because –
So you were playing football just because it was what you did then, not because you were burning with
right. It's to play it's football. Like, you know, it's two sports. You know, basketball that I went first, but all the guys, you know, it's kind of like you're just expected in these little towns. Okay, well, you're playing football, but I started, you know, getting a feel for it when I was a sophomore, and then my junior year, I was, you know, making a bunch of plays, and you know, I don't think it took till about the end years of my. You know, pro football that I realized that I had, you know, good quick hand-eye, you know, coordination and lower center gravity. And, you know, I was able to, you know, shed blocks easily. And so I did that both in college and high school. And I was, you know, usually the top lineman, you know, at all those places I went to. And then you get to the Cowboys and it's like, what is this? You know, I mean, it's flex defense. I mean, it's like, step in a paint bucket here and then go there and they're going to run over you. And it's like, well, you learn that, you know, it's harder on the tackle to have to go that extra distance to block you because, you know, you could sidestep them. So, you know, you kind of learn the trade. But, I mean, the guys, I mean, all of them, I mean, I just think the world of, you know, Bob and Jethro and George. And, you know, they just helped bring me along. And, you know, by the next season, you know, I had pretty well got it, you know, together. And so, you know, I was the defensive end, you know, when we won the first Super Bowl. And, you know, we didn't back up in those days. And so it isn't like everybody comes in and, you know, relieves you.
And you played six preseason games. And you practiced in full pads twice a day and beat the hell out of each other all through camp and during the week.
Yeah.
And what do you think now when you see the way it is now?
Well, it's a made for, you know, TV show, you know, it's like I mean, who's going to pay you $200-$300 for, you know, a ticket, or at least, you know, I mean, but it's like, this is a different class thing. I, you know, kind of chuckled to, you know, Aaron Donald, who's actually my favorite defensive tackle in the NFL, and he's also an engineering student, by the way, or graduate in it. And so when I was his age, I made 31.5. And next year he's going to get 31.5 plus 0.000.
Yeah, you made $31,000.
500.
And he's making $31 million.
Right.
And if I'd told you when you made your biggest contract that that would happen someday, that the top defensive tackle would make $31 million, what would you have said to that?
Well, I would, you know, say that it's, you know, impossible of, you know, how all these things work, but it's a different game, but still it's a very entertaining game. And it's, you know, I hate to see, you know, players move around like that, you know. I mean,
from team to team, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, you know the fans are the ones that are, you know, kind of cut short on this thing. On, you know, it's nice you can sign players in, bring them out, but, you know, the over the years you get attached to these players, and you know blowing their family, you know, you just, that's part of the team. And, you know, that's why I said I feel like I played in the greatest era of the NFL. And so does Bob Lilly. He says the same thing. Even though we didn't make all that money, you know, that they're making now, but we had a great life experience. And, I mean, frankly, in my mind, my life would have been incomplete if all I did is played football, made a bunch of money, and just did a whole bunch of promotion and advertising. You know, I really, really enjoyed, you know, the business that I was in, and that really fulfilled me. And that was kind of the point of the book. It's like, well, I used football for my number one obsession, you know, was to have my own business and run it. And I did that, and I went through all the ups and downs on it and have no regrets. And, you know, it was just, and that's kind of what the book is, that for younger people, you know, they got to see, you know, you kind of find out where your talent is and what you are good at. And, you know, just keep finding and searching and try, and, you know, you fail, you adjust and do all these things. And so I don't expect, you know, younger people to buy the book, but I do expect a lot of fathers to understand what I'm trying to say. And even, you know, with my children, you know, I mean, they work. I mean, they didn't work as hard as I did, nor did I work as hard as my parents did at all. I mean, my God, I mean, my dad had to use horses to, you know, till the fields. That was a different deal. And, you know, it was just a different kind of era. But it's still, you know, a lot of the basics are still there.
You quote your mother as saying more than once, football's a means to an end. Mm-hmm. So she didn't object to you playing.
Right.
But you weren't raised to think that your objective is to play football.
Not at all.
When in there did you realize, and I guess by now you're with the Cowboys, that the construction and home building business would be something that would kind of light your fire?
Well, when I worked for
the way, there may be as many people who have heard of Larry Cole Holmes as saw you play who are listening to us right now.
Well, it was the Hurst Euless Bedford era, you know, Grapevine, Colleyville in Southlake, and, you know, where I did, you know, my development work, and did a little bit in Arlington, but a short period of time. But as far as when I got that interest, I mean, when I worked for those two Veldy farmers, they both built the Quonset hut, and I just loved putting that together and, you know, putting on the shingles and raising and see how the foundation works and do all that. And it's like, and then I worked at a lumberyard, and, you know, my job was to build gale box trailers, you know, for silage and, you know, to pull around. And I did that job, and it was around the lumber. I mean, sometimes I'd have to stock two I-4s. That was a pain in the ass. But anyway, it was a nice little thing. And then I went off to college to be, you know, the engineer, and I tried engineering, but you can't play football and work for a company engineer. It's like, that doesn't work that way. I mean, you know, oh, I'm sorry, why don't you call, Cole in San Francisco and ask him about this, you know, engineering thing. It's like, no, that ain't going to happen. So that's where I kind of got the idea that, you know, the only time you're going to get any respect is if you're signing the paycheck and you're, you know, figuring out, you know, what you got to do. And I kind of self-taught myself, but I had some, you know, really good people in the Hercules Bedford that, you know, helped me out, get started. And it's I have such good memories of how it all came together and many, you know, many things and disappointments. But, you know, when you live your life and you look at the whole, you know, mask of it, it's like, yeah, there were a whole lot more good things going on. And I thank my foundation. A lot of speakers talk about that, but, you know, I came from good folks, solid people that had the right attitude of, you know, how to raise, you know, families and everything. And, you know, every generation is rebellious from the next and next. And, you know, we see it come, but, you know, my kids turn out well, my grandchildren turn well, so there must be something, you know, that, you know, you pass along that maybe they'll do. But it's like my grandson said, well, it's like, I don't, you know, yeah, grandparents are pretty neat, but, you know, you can just go to Wikipedia and get answers to a lot of things.
All right, I got two or three other real quick things I want to ask you about. They're not necessarily real quick. I don't want to give them short shrift, but so one is the title of your book, Living the Dream on America's Team.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys did not come to be called America's Team until after the 1977 Super Bowl.
Right.
And that was the name that NFL Films, not Tex Schramm, although he later said he wished he'd thought of it.
Yeah.
But America's Team was the name that NFL Films gave to the Cowboys championship season highlight film. Mm-hmm. And I had players in the year or two after that tell me that was players didn't really like that very much because they heard about it on the field from other players. I remember Pat Donovan was a starting offensive tackle, and Pat used to say every defensive lineman that lines up over me would say just before the snap of the ball, here's your America's Team, and then bring a little extra. Did you experience that? What was your player's eye perspective of the team being called America's Team?
Well, you know, I probably had a different, you know, mentality than other guys, but, you know, my favorite introduction, you know, was, you know, coming out at the RFK Stadium in Washington getting booed, you know. And so, you know, having that name, at first it's like, well, you know, Tex Schramm, you know, he wanted to be the first to win three Super Bowls. And it's like, damn it, Tex, don't say that, you know, before the Super Bowl and get them all riled up. Now, that bothered me more. But the America's Team, I mean, frankly, I think it was born on, you know, the Hail Mary pass game and Roger Staubach and then Roger's interviews and, you know, with Phyllis George and, you know, that whole thing that you kind of set it up. And like I said, by the time of that 79 game, it's like, you know, we're just different than everybody else and we're damn proud of it.
You've mentioned the flex defense,
mm-hmm.
which I don't even begin to know how to describe to today's fans, but it was completely counterintuitive
mm-hmm.
for especially the front seven.
Right.
So in just a couple of minutes, how, and you say in your book, this was nothing like, I'd never been exposed to anything like this.
Right.
And you jump in and you figure out a way to start after Willie Towns got hurt right away. But how would you best describe the flex defense?
Well, it's a series of picks. Like basketball picks is really what it is. And what you're trying to do is, you know, you're trying to set up Leroy Jordan, you know, to scrape off the back and make the plays. And if this happens, this happens. You loop in, you loop out. You know, you've got to read, you know, the tackle and the guard. And I mean, it's really important. In college, you know, I just hit the guy in front of me, threw him off, and, you know, looked for the ball. But this was different. You had to discipline yourself, put yourself in position to do it. And, you know, it was just so unnatural to do that, but, you know, so many guys, and a lot of guys came in, and I mentioned that, you know, they were good players that they just couldn't, you know, pick
Coy,
that up.
Coy Bacon was Coy one
Bacon,
you mentioned.
You know, Clarence Williams, well, he probably could have picked it up. He went to Green Bay, but, you know, there's a few others that You were that way.
And Chuck Howley, you remember the story that you told in the book about, I guess it was your rookie year, right?
Yeah,
and you're
yeah.
starting, and what did you say to Chuck Howley in the middle of a game?
Well, it was like, you know, it was like, I didn't quite hear the call and everything. It's like, you know, do I line up here? And he says, I don't care. Just get the hell out of my way. And that actually was a preseason game.
Okay.
By the time I was a starter, he was very supportive of me and, you know, to do it. And but he was the one that inspired me to start my own business, you know, because he had that.
He had the dry cleaner.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, you weren't there at the time, but, I mean, you know, he would get dressed fast, go to the locker room. I said, what the heck's going on here? He said, I get back to my office. You know, see what happened during the day. Well, I did the same thing. I had Linda pretty much in charge, my wife, you know, when I was gone. But, you know, you still got to, you know, see it for yourself right. and, you know, the people.
All right, last thing. I'd be completely remiss if I didn't give you a chance to talk about the Zero Club, which was basically you and Pat Toomey and Blaine Nye.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So tell, and I wrote a little book several years ago, called Stadium Stories, and one of the chapters was about the Zero Club, which the late, great Frank Luxa of the Dallas Times-Herald, he really invented it.
Right.
Named it, you've got to find a way to read that story, but just tell people what the Zero Club was all about.
Well, it was, you know, this was like in, you know, 1971, I mean, that was my fourth year and Blaine's fourth year. We came in together. It was Pat's second year. And, you know, we were going down to, Saturday night, and everybody's getting plans, and they're going, you know, this is Thousand Oaks, California. You know, you go to the bar and go to this club, da-da-da, you know, just go out and try to, you know, go to a movie or do something. And Blaine and I were just in our room. We're just laying there. It's like, I don't do anything. And
like, you just had no motivation to get up and do anywhere, do anything.
Well, we were both married, and we shouldn't be out, you know, patting around. But it was like, there is a reason to get out, just to get out, you know. And finally, you know, he came in and just, you know, kind of started that whole thing. It's like, my God. And then finally we got shamed in and said, all right, well, we'll go downtown. And so we hitched a ride with a rookie who got a car, took us downtown. And then all the stories, you know, that started with Blaine and Pat. And, you know, of course, they gave me hell of writing the book. You know, they both did. It's like I said, well, I got to promote this because otherwise it doesn't sell. And so I resigned from the Zero Club. And they said, no, you, it's not possible to resign.
They did not accept your resignation.
No, it's not possible for you to resign.
Did they just fine you?
No, they just quit commenting. Now Blaine, I've talked to Blaine, you know, since that time. Actually, he's kind of enjoyed that. And, you know, he was such a good roommate and still is a good friend. You see him, you know, real close to every couple of years, you know, we get together.
I saw him a couple of years ago in California. He's just, Blaine Nye, by the way, is the, apropos of absolutely nothing, he's the father-in-law of one of Troy Aikman's teammates at UCLA, Tom Whitenight.
Yes.
Then Pat Toomey, an accomplished writer, one of the brightest people. Those two guys...
Yeah.
We're two of the brightest that ever played for this or any other franchise.
Yeah.
And you snuck in there, too.
Yeah.
And you described the one thing, was it media day of the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
And everybody's talking to everybody else, and the three of you are just sitting there?
Yeah, and we're sitting there. Nobody wanted to talk to us. And then they go up and start talking to guys on the specialty teams, for God's sake. You know? And it's like, all right, this kind of arrived. And finally says, okay, we don't want anybody to talk to us. Just stay away from us. And they did.
If you want a good chuckle, Google it.
Yeah.
Like Larry tells his grandchildren.
Yeah.
Google the Zero Club and Frank Luxa, L-U-K-S-A. Yeah. And then if you want a life lesson as well as a great little history of the Dallas Cowboys before they became America's team, the book is Living the Dream on America's Team. And the author is Larry Cole, who made my favorite play in the last 43 years of the Dallas Cowboys. Great to see you. Thanks for your time.
Well, good to see you. And, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. and Google Play and iTunes. So anyway, but anyway, good to see you, and I admire your work that you've done through the years.
Oh, thank you.
And it really is quite a career that you've had also.
I'm still hanging in there. Yep. Thank you very much. I didn't do as well as you did. I can't afford to retire. That's the great number 63, Larry Cole. This is Then and Now. I'm Brad Sham.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.